Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49%. Based on credit worthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant.
Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Work app, it always seems to be very well. Rewind Classic.
Hello, my name is Buddy Peace. I am a producer, an editor, a DJ, a music maker, an atomic dog, and for intro and outro purposes, I'm temporarily standing in for your regular host and proud creator of this particular podcast, Mr. Brett Goldstein. As Royal Flush once said, drop topping while the feds watching, they on my back, heat me up like Al Pacino or Joe Pesci in Casino. But not both of them together in The Irishman. That's like 3.5 hours long, and who has the time? Never seen it, Mr. Flush, but it's still half as long as Satan Tango. Every week, Brett invites a guest on, he tells them they've died, and he talks to them about their life through the medium of film. But this week, we are revisiting an earlier episode of the podcast while we take an ever so quick break. Yes, indeed, it is that time once more for a Films to be Buried With Rewind Classic. This rewind is from March 25th, 2021, originally episode 139, featuring comedian, writer, host, and podcaster Jamali Maddox. This is another mid-pandemic episode, but on this occasion, we were a little deeper into the routine of it all. And as you'll hear in this recording, getting to the stage where a lot of us were ready to get back on it and get back to, apologies for using that well-worn phrase, some semblance of normality. We heard all about his show Hate Thy Neighbour and the many varied scrapes that came along with the making of it, his Taskmaster appearances, all sorts of good comedy talk and process chat, and wrapped up in there we also heard about his harrowing near-death experience on the road in Southeast Asia. This episode is what they call a roller coaster. Let me take this opportunity to also remind you that Brett has a Patreon page for the podcast, upon which you get a bonus section on every episode with a secret from each guest, more questions, and a video of each episode which looks all nice and fresh. There are a selection of tiers on there too, and on the uppermost tiers I will make you a cinematic soundtrack mixtape each month with full track list that I reckon you'll enjoy very much. So if you're of a supporting nature and feel like some extras from this show, you'll find them all there. So that is it for now. Let's get you settled in with a really fun look back at a very enjoyable and also very real episode with the always great Jamali Maddox. All right, catch you at the end for a quick sign off, but for now, please enjoy episode 139 via episode 291 of Films to be Buried With.
Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by an actor, a writer, a stand-up, a host, a documentarian, a brave soldier of good, a hero, a legend, and a vapor. Please welcome to the show the brilliant Jamali Maddox!
Yo, what's up, man? Yo, I appreciate vapor the most.
Yeah, that was, I left that till last. That's like the pinnacle.
Yeah, I think that was the big crescendo. People were like, okay, yeah. Vapor, fuck yeah, man. That's a real one right there.
That's a real skill. Where's he learned that shit?
An actor is especially when you're telling me actor, like you're a real actor. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just say a couple lines in Friends sitcoms badly.
Listen, that's acting.
I heard that, bro.
I wanted to talk to you about a couple of things. Well, firstly, how are you? You're all right. How's your pandemic?
I'm good, bruv.
Yeah.
You know what, man? Like, it's sort of like the seven stages of grief, if it's seven or whatever, how many stages. Mm-hmm. And I'm at the point of acceptance now where I'm just like, as long as there's food in my fridge. Like, I started saying things like that now, like food in my fridge and bills are paid. So, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm fine, bruv. It's just fucking, you know, I'm just ready to get back to some type of normalcy, but then also that weird feeling of not really remembering what that is.
Oh, no.
Do you know what I'm saying, though? Like, it's all that I remember, but it's...
I feel it. And I feel like every time they say lockdown's over, part of me gets anxious and goes, but then what? What is it?
Yeah. What's the thing? Then what is life?
Yeah.
It's a weird feeling. But yeah, I'm good, bruv. I'm solid, man.
And I don't know if you've been thinking this. I've been, you know, really missing gigs. But now when I think about a gig, I'm like, my sort of fear is that the audience are going to be fucking rabid because they're all just going to be feral because everyone's been locked inside and it's going to be like...
Oh, facts. It's going to be like Junglers in the early 2000s, bro.
Yeah.
It's going to be, every gig is just going to be Junglers Portsmouth. Like, every gig. It's just going to, even like the, yeah, even like a nice gig, like Sunday special is going to have extra security. So that's a very niche reference for the audience. But like, you know, it's going to be mad, I think. But you know, I remember when the last lockdown ended, when we had that little break.
Yeah.
The audience has got a lot younger, you know what I'm saying? Which isn't a bad thing, you know. And it's sort of like a younger audience and it's sort of people are up for it. So I think it will bounce back, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know, comedy and shit. But we'll see.
You made a show with Vice called Hate Thy Neighbor.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really extraordinary. And the reason I called you a brave soldier is because, you know, you put yourself, I don't know how much security you had around you. I don't know how it was made.
None. We didn't have none.
None. And you put yourself deep in extremist hate groups around the world, mm-hmm. basically, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess my question, what I genuinely like to know is, having done all that and seen all the things you saw, how often did you feel sort of like hopeless, like, fuck, these people are fucked, this is so dark? And how often did you feel empathy or understanding or like, oh, I see what's going on here and there is a way out of this sort of thing? Or was it like, how negative a experience was it, I guess?
Yeah. Do you know what? It's like this, yeah. Because, you know, I thought about it a lot. It was a little while ago too, so I've kind of been able to separate that time from now. Yeah. And at the time, when I'm making it, like, if it sounds weird, but I'm sort of in character. So I don't think as much stuff of in terms of empathy and stuff. It's only when I step away or, you know, fear and all that type of stuff, you know, different ends of the spectrum. But it's not the hate groups that worry you because they're the most extreme versions of an idea. And they are small, you know, for me to sit here and tell you that, you know, there's going to be another actual Nazis with swastikas, red swastika uprising is, I find it very unlikely, you know. But the real worrying thing is sometimes those ideas that you hear from the extremists, you hear in sort of much more digestible things in normal people. Right, you know what I'm saying though?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, just because I think what it is we all, you know, any reasonable person can hear about, you know, gassing Jews and go, that is fucked up. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But that extreme idea isn't the idea you have to worry about because that's so extreme that even racist people go, wait, that's fucking mad. But it's the sort of more, some of their ideas are quite mainstream in terms of stuff you hear every day that is wrong, and that's worrying.
That makes a lot of sense.
It's those sort of things that they sort of, some of their beliefs are beliefs that I hear from people every day, and that's what I go, yo, that's fucked up, you know, because it just shows you how hate can grow and how these ideas sort of snowball into such, like, much bigger ideas and sort of go more extreme. So it's like, you know, but in terms of actual just normal conservatism and stuff, you kind of don't sort of think about it, or sort of normal liberalism. I sort of saw the most extreme ends of the left and the right. So it's kind of like, I don't get too swept up and go, oh my God, it's all crazy. But it's like, you know, we, you know, if we're being honest, it's TV, we suck. We, you go and try and find the people that have the most extreme ends of that view. So it's not, you know, so in that sense, you don't get that. Yeah.
Do you,
so
that makes sense. Do you keep in touch with any of them?
Do you know what? There's been a handful that I've seen after the show. There's a couple I ran into.
Oh, really?
There's one I saw at a music festival.
No way.
Right? There's one I saw at a music festival. He was. It was an episode where we went to Berkeley University where it was about free speech. It was where Milo Yiannopoulos was going to speak at Berkeley. And the guy I saw was, he was a part of the conservative group that brought him in.
Right.
You know, there was like, because I remember him and he was like, I didn't dislike the guy, you know, he had sort of really, there was this one bit where basically he's been given these flyers by Milo and he's like, he's a conservative, but he's pretty, you know, he's pretty normal dude. You know, he's just like some young Asian guy. I think he's like maybe East Asian. So I think he's like Indian and he's like a young Indian guy and, you know, 21, liked rave music, but was just physically conservative and joined this group anyway. So he got given these flyers by like Milo Yiannopoulos and it just said things like Antifa and, you know, it just, everything was like and it was crazy. And it was just his face as he opened it and went, oh no. and then because he's brought this guy in, so he looks like he's responsible now. And then so then all you see is me on camera just go, that's fucked. And I just kept on laughing, saying, you're fucked. Like, I just couldn't stop laughing. And I saw him at a music festival and he came up to me and, you know, he was on Molly, but he gave me like a hug and that. And he was like, he actually thanked me. He was like, you know, I appreciate that you wasn't too unfair with me. And I saw another person who was a trans woman. So she was a man, transitioned into a woman, and then basically was anti-trans and anti-feminist. And I saw her at a convention.
Right.
And she came up to me, said hello. You know, so the ones I've seen have been fine. Like, no one, you know, the ones that I've seen, and one of the black Israelites who were like the black spiritual nationalist group who thought the white man was the devil and stuff. He messages me now and again on Facebook and he'll say shit like, he still says like, he would message me saying the white man's still the devil and shit like that. And, you know, so a couple of them still staying, still reach out and say hello and stuff. Cause I think they kind of appreciated that. Even like I was up front with them, I would tell them from the jump, I don't agree with anything you say. I think you're crazy. You know what I'm saying? And I always said to them, like, I will take the piss out of your ideas, but I'm not going to say you're fat, or I'm not going to take the piss out of the fact that you're old, or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But your ideas, I'm going to fucking take the piss out of because I think it's stupid.
Yeah.
And they kind of, and I stuck to my word on that. You know what I mean? I think they kind of appreciated that, some of them. I mean, some of them are just fascists, but the sort of less crazy ones.
How often were you thinking, I'm in too deep, this is scary,
there was a couple of sticky moments, like, you know, because you're in America in certain states, and there's just things like people have guns. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, there was one where we interviewed this guy. It never went to air, but we interviewed this guy who was like a sort of one percenter where they're like kind of, they don't believe in the government and shit. I don't know what the miscommunication was. I don't know if it was one of the producers had told him something different or if he was just talking shit. But I started asking about the one percenters and he was like, you're not here to ask me about that. You're here to ask me about hunting. And I'm like, why the fuck do you think I want to ask you about hunting? Like, but he had blocked. So just the way his car was parked, he had blocked us in. And he's got a gun and he's mad. You know what I'm saying, though? Like that where you go, man, like, you know, you have to de-escalate that situation because those situations can heat up so much where, you know, something happens, someone pushes someone, you know, punch, and then someone shoots someone. Like, it's just, it shit happens like that, you know? And the one that was the one where I was like, it's the only time where I was like, yo, this is a situation that I shouldn't be in was when I went to the White Power Music Festival in Ukraine.
Fuck.
And there was like dudes stabbing each other. Like I saw a guy stabbing another guy in the head.
My God.
Like this guy was like, they were like pushing each other, like mosh pitting. And one of the guys hit the guy and the guy just went, and just went, like that. And then all we heard on the tannoy was something in Ukrainian. And I said, what did the guy say on the tannoy? And he was like, oh, the guy said, can everyone please put away their knives? And there was a guy standing next to me. He had a knife. And he went, oh, put it away. But that was like, that was the one time where I was like, yo, and people were fucking mad I was there. Like, they were not happy I was there.
Given any training beforehand in terms of de-escalation and stuff?
No.
I'm interested, you say you have to de-escalate it. Like, what's your technique of de-escalation?
Well, the thing is as well is, you know, I'm not a Superman. Just I'm saying, I ain't no fucking tough guy. But, you know, like, I grew up in a shithole area. And you just know how to carry yourself. You know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah.
And like, so it's like when I went to the white power, when I went to this Klan rally once, I went to a Klan bar and they were like burning the cross and they tried to intimidate me. And I just stood my ground, like, as right. above, you know, and they were trying to, like, you know, they were saying how they were going to try and lynch me and all this type of shit, like in my earshot. And I just stood my ground and I just, you know, I didn't budge. And I said, but I ain't going nowhere. This is, I'm here. If you got an issue with that, then you got to do what you got to do. And when I was leaving, one of them had the mics on and he was like, you know what? I don't like that, but he's got some boost. You know what I'm saying? Like, they didn't like me, but they were like, bro, he's got booze, bro. I'm going to give it to him, bro. He fucking, you know what I mean? He came to the belly of the beast and he weren't flinching, you know? Yeah. And it's, you know, just realizing, bro, and, you know, having humor and all that type of stuff. Because there was a couple of times where people try and test you. I mean, there was one time where I said something about a president. I think I was even joking about it, but I said something. And then one of the guys said to the guy, you know, I went to this, it was sort of like, you know, like where they do the bullfighting and shit and the rodeo.
All right.
And then one of the guys was like, yeah, I told a couple guys what you said and they said this. And I said, bug, man, you can tell them, they can come talk to me about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and then that sort of, because they're just testing you. They're not really going to do nothing to you. It's just to testing you and they're seeing where you're at. And if you just, you know, it's not like being violent or being tough and being like, well, I'll fight all of you. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's stupid.
It's just standing,
just standing your ground and being like, okay, well, you know, you're going to do what you're going to do. You know what I'm saying? And as well as you realize as well is that, you know, they're on camera and no one ain't really going to do that to you on camera. And even like the one with the EDL where that, you know, it looked like, you know, he was trying to fight me. To be honest with you, bruv, he wasn't going to do nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just wasn't. You know what I'm saying? He had ample opportunity to do something and he didn't. You know what I'm saying? This is the reality of what's going to happen and what does happen is two different things.
The last thing I want to know about on this, if you don't mind, is with any of them, with any of these extremists, in your conversations with them, did you ever feel like you changed their mind or you affected them with your, or was it always just?
Nah. I mean, people like to go back to the Nazi one. Mm-hmm. Where I'm talking to the Nazi guy, and what it is I had found out that this Nazi guy had a kid with a Native American woman before he was a Nazi. Right. And so I was basically saying to him, well, your kids are the thing that you're against. You know what I'm saying? Like your own flesh and blood that you say you love is the thing you hate. How does that conflict with you? And he sort of thought about it. He'd never thought about it like that before. And he goes, okay, you know, I never thought about that. But then you hear the news and, you know, he had basically become a lot more. Now he's the leader. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I think that
you double down.
I think that's what you do though. You either double down or you don't. And I think, you know, I didn't go in there to change anyone's belief. I'm not fucking, you know, that's not why I was there either. Mm. I think people were, they're so wrapped up in their own things and they're so in their own bubble of what it is they believe. Because you think what they believe in, everyone around them believes that.
Yeah.
All of their fucking social media projects that at them. You know, and I've seen it happen because I remember when I was researching for the show, my YouTube algorithm thought I was far right wing. And all they would do is send me far right wing stuff.
God, that's
you know what I'm saying though?
Yeah.
So all of my videos now that I was getting, you might like this, is fucking maybe the Holocaust didn't happen videos.
Oh my God.
Do you know what I'm saying? And so that shit was wild, man. Like, so I can see from an outsider how that happens. How these, you know, I think echo chamber and all these words are words that get thrown around a lot and not really understand. And I never really understood what that was, but it's real, man.
It's real,
like,
you know,
it's so fucking real, man, where you can do, and it's like both sides too, you know?
Yeah.
That's sort of a weird thing you've got to do nowadays. You've got to say both sides too. It's, you know, it's both the sides, but you know. Yeah. So that was that, man.
Fascinating. Oh, very interesting. And on a very similar vein, you're now doing Taskmaster. Congratulations.
I mean, you know what, man? Like, I think that, you know, I you should go carry on doing the hard-hitting stuff, innit?
You've got a brand and you're sticking with it. And I respect
I've got a brand and I know what my people want. But you know what, man? Like, it's just, I after that show, I was so willing. All the things I got offered was, it's like, all right, look, what we're going to do is we're going to put you in a cult and you're going to join. And it's like, I don't want to fucking do none of that. And I really,
I want to throw a potato in a hole.
Yeah. And it's that weird thing of, and it's like, not to take it too seriously, but in terms of a career.
Mm-hmm.
I just realized I didn't want that for my career. So, it's a hard choice because you've got to go, fuck, I'm going to turn down a lot of work and maybe sit at home for a bit, sit on the bench for a little bit, waiting for another project that I want to do. You know what I'm saying, though? Because you can
know what you're saying.
Yeah, because I ended up I ended up doing another documentary series. And it's just, looking back on it, my heart probably wasn't as in it as much as it could have been, and there were so many issues with it. And it's just like, and I had actually been offered something else that I think I wanted to do more, and I should have done the other thing. But, you sort of, showbiz is that weird thing where you sort of like, but it's your own show, and I'm happy just to be a reoccurring character in this thing that I kind of like. You know what I'm saying, though?
I do, yeah, so, completely.
Yeah, so,
Have you started Taskmaster? Have you filmed it? Have you done it?
Yeah, we filmed it. It's coming out in the 16th of March.
Was it fun?
It was. It's a fun fucking show, man. It's just fun. It's just silly, and it runs because they've done so many seasons. They know how to make that show, so it's just smooth. You know what I'm saying? There's no problems occur, and it's just it was just fun and just. I'm a comedian first, and I think is I kind of stopped doing silly shit for a long time, and there's a lot of fun in silly. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like, and I'm enjoying that. I enjoy doing that, man. Like, it was like a nice pace. And I think, and I hope people like it, you know what I'm saying? Because I know it's like such an institution for people. Like, my whole joke is that when I'm in character, it's that whole kind of thing of like, and I don't really care. So I sort of wrote this tweet saying, like, I'm on Taskmaster giving minimal effort, right? Just, and then people are messaging me saying, please don't ruin this for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, that pressure on that. And you go, bro, people fucking love that show.
Yeah,
man.
They do.
And it's fun. Then it was a good crew. Me, Charlotte Ritchie, Lee Mack, Mike Wozniak, Sarah Kendall. So, some fucking great people. Fun show. Fantastic. Had a good time, man.
Did you learn anything about yourself where you're like, fuck, I'm far more competitive than I thought, or you're not?
Yeah.
Right.
100%. Like, there's one bit, and it was like towards the end of the. It's like, because when you normally do like panel shows,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to give a little secret to your fans here, is I've done panel shows, I've done 10 panel shows maybe, I can't tell you how many I've won and lost. The points mean nothing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying though? Yeah. Like literally, I cannot tell you if I've ever won a panel show.
Mm-hmm.
That one is the one where you actually care.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? And there's that one point where I'm like, and it was too far in the game. And I started like arguing and I had to catch myself. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I went a bit mad there. And everyone was like, no, it's all right. Don't worry. I was like, no, I went mad. And I was like, no, but like, how are you going to give him a point? And I was like, wait, what? And I had to catch myself. And I was like, I'm so fucking sorry. I don't know what happened to me. I went fucking crazy for a second. And it does that to you, man.
Yeah.
Especially when you're around other competitive people and shit. And, but yeah, it was a fun show, man.
That's great. Jamali, I've forgotten to tell you something.
Yeah.
Fuck. I should have told you this in the beginning, or at least when we emailed, I should have let you know. But I'm just going to have to say it now and hope that you're going to be okay with it. But
all right, you say it to me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you've died. You're dead.
What?
Yeah.
This is like the afterlife.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me, how did you die?
I mean, obviously, probably in a drive-by, probably. I got taken by the streets, didn't it?
Yeah, it was so inevitable. What happened?
It was,
After Taskmaster, you didn't put enough effort in and someone
took me
by.
Out. In the hard streets of Reading.
A Taskmaster fan.
Wow. Damn, I can't believe this is it.
Yeah. Do you worry about that?
I've nearly died so many times. I've nearly died a lot of times.
Really?
Yeah, like proper near-death experiences. The other ones, I had one massive near-death experience and that kind of changed my perspective on death a lot. Please where the me. Other ones were... So basically, long story short, I'm going to Australia to do some shows.
Mm-hmm.
But before I go to Australia, I do some shows in Asia because it's sort of somewhat... From Asia to Australia is like maybe, you know, 10 hours. And then from England. So I say, fuck it, let me divide. And plus, I've never been Asia and I want to see Asia. You know, the money ain't, you're not making big money in them areas. But, you know, it's fuck it. Eventually. So I go Indonesia first. And I'm feeling kind of weird, but I'm like, oh, it's jet lag. And I get to Bangkok and I'm feeling just like bad and ill. So I'm like, bro, I need to go doctors maybe. And basically I wake up, I go downstairs and I just black out, right? I just collapse on the floor. And they come, this hotel rush up to me and they're just like, yo, where are you at? Like, are you all right? And I'm just like, yeah. Like, and they're like, we'll get you a tuk-tuk, right? So I'm in the back of this tuk-tuk. I go to the hospital and the nurse or the doctor puts a thing in my mouth and nose and says, oh, you've got influenza, like you got the flu. And I'm like, are you sure? And she's like, nah, every time you think you have the flu, you have a cold. This is the flu. And I'm like, all right, cool. So I went and did a show, right? Actually went and did the show. And then I come back and I'm still feeling fucked up, right? And then basically I go back to my yard. I'm going to sleep. But as I'm going to sleep, I feel like that my heart is being like grabbed and clawed at. And I can feel myself blacking out and I'm sweating. And I'm sweating buckets, bro. And I can feel myself, I can't breathe. And I'm like, fuck, I'm going. And I couldn't, and it's that weird feeling of falling asleep and it's like, it's not even like falling asleep. It's sort of like losing a grip where your eyes are open, but it's like a black hole is closing up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yo, like I'm going. Like, and I remember texting my mom because basically the hotel, the guy put me in was shit. So I booked my own hotel and no one knew where I was. So I had to text her like, yo, because you know, let's be real, not to be whatever, but you can go missing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just one of them places you could go, you go missing, bro. And my heart is just fucking fit and I'm sweating buckets and I'm feeling the idea of fighting it. And I saw all these flashes of going in my head. And I had this weird thought in my head that when I was young, if you would have told me when I was 22 that I was going to die in a hotel in Bangkok, I would have gone at 27. I would have gone, ah, fuck yeah. But I just had this idea that I didn't want to die, but I can't stop myself. And that I'm not ready to go, but there's nothing I can do about it. And I wasn't at peace with it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the horrifying part, is the fact that you feel like you're dying, but there's no peace. There's no good feeling. There's no, this like, okay, this is my time. Let's go. I just felt like I didn't want to go. So I blacked out, woke up in like a puddle of my own sweat. And I've gone to the hospital. And then the guy's like, yeah, I think you got influenza. But I made sure I got all these, like, I got STI checked. I got everything. And the guy's like, I don't know. Gone back to my hotel, still feeling fucked up, blacked out again, went back to the hospital. And then the doctor's like, nah, we'll put you in a room. They put me in a room and the doctor's coming the next day. And she goes, basically, put this mask on. You have measles. You have influenza too. And your lungs have hemorrhaged.
Oh my God.
So my whole lungs are filling up with blood. And Jesus. It was just, and they put me in this quarantine where they put me in this little room in Bangkok. So none of the nurses speak English and I can't express to them how I feel, like I'm burning up. And I remember I had this dream that I'm in hell. And it's sort of like, you know that scene in The Matrix where it's like they're in, like they're having a party in like the big cave thing. It felt like that, but it was like a jungle rave.
Oh, wow.
So it was this jungle music playing, like that jungle. And it's just sweat. And like, it was so vivid. I could feel the heat on my skin where I was just, where my lungs are hemorrhaging. I'm so hot that I've started getting, what's the word called? Delusion. Is it delusion? You know what I'm talking about though, right?
I know what
you're
talking
about. The word, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Hallucinations.
I started doing that. I started getting hallucinations. And the doctor, so when I asked the doctor, she was like, nah, you're fine. And then someone had to fly over to come bring me back. And the doctor said to them, like, look, yeah, no, he would have died if he didn't come to the hospital. He would have gone because his lungs were hemorrhaging too much. And he wouldn't have made it. If he would have stayed another couple nights, he wouldn't have made it. And yeah, it fucked me up, man. Like that really, like, you know. Yeah. And then I got home and I couldn't see. Like I went blind. And the reason I went blind is because I was so dehydrated that my corneas cracked. Like that's how I think I lost in like in a week or that I probably lost like a stone away. And then I took a week off and I went to Australia. You got a fucking gig, baby. You know, you got a gig in it. And I went to Australia, man. I was so fucking ill. I started getting chest infection. I slept the whole flight there.
Wow.
So you imagined hell as like the Matrix Revolutions orgy, yeah, in a cave with jungle music. I mean, yeah, that sounds bad. Music.
No, it doesn't sound bad at all. But it was just this weird. Yeah, it was just like this jungle. And rain. It was just so hot.
Right, it was so hot. That's why you knew it was hell.
Yeah, there's no water. We might not have been hell. We might have just been a fucking sick jungle rave. It might have just been a sick squat rave and that. Yeah, you know I'm saying, but like squat rave in hell.
That's, you know, so interesting. What do you think happens when you die now? What do you think?
I don't know, you know, like I sort of play with many ideas. Like I don't believe in no sort of organized religion, mm-hmm, like anything Abrahamic or anything like that. I believe that the facts of what happens to you, for me, is sort of comfort enough. The fact that I die and I go back into the earth, mm-hmm, and then I make life again. That for me gives me comfort enough. Like, I don't think I need to go somewhere with pearly gates and white clouds where I see my, mm-hmm, grandma again. Like, you know, but the fact that I go in the ground and I make life again, you know what I'm saying? And truly just carry on with the cycle of what this is sort of enough for me. Yeah. I think, you know, you just go back to wherever you came from, really. And that's it.
Amazing.
You know, yeah, you live this life as much as you can, then you fucking, then you go and that's it. It's not fucking about, you know what I mean?
I like that after all.
So that's too deep for this podcast, my bad.
No, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. I was wondering.
You have told her. You're like, sorry,
no,
so
not
you're
at all.
Punchline. You're like, all right, well, it's nice having
not
you
at body. All. Not at all. I just like that after all your travels of the world with extremist groups, your view of death is the same as a racist saying, go back to where you came from.
Yeah, for real. So basically what happens is I go back to Africa. I go back to Africa and I pay my taxes over there. Nah, but I just think you go, yeah.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's beautiful. What I will say is you may be disappointed to find there is a heaven, actually, and your grandma is there.
Oh, God. I mean, you know, good news. All my grandmas are alive, actually.
Well, this one is... I got more news for you.
Oh, you haven't heard.
It's a heck of a day. Anyway, this heaven's great. You'll love it. Lots of good gigs. No flu or measles or exploding lungs. But in this heaven, they want to know about your life, but they want to know about your life through films. And the first thing they want to ask you is, what is the first film you remember seeing?
The first film I remember seeing is a bootleg pirate video.
Yes, please.
Of Aladdin.
Nice.
And I remember it was pirate, so it's sort of the picture. And back in the day, VHS pirates, they ain't like the pirates now.
Yeah.
These were VHS pirates, so the quality was fucking
Was it
terrible,
like filmed man. In a cinema?
No. It wasn't filmed in a cinema. Like, it was sort of just like duplicated.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because this was maybe... Fuck, this was... I was maybe three, so the film probably had just come out. But to buy the original VHS... would have cost you like 10, 15 pounds, 20 quid. Yeah. We didn't have that. So you could get the £3 one. And what it would be is it would probably just be someone who got the original tape and duplicated it so much that the picture quality went terrible.
And then photocopied the picture, right? And slipped that in the sleeve. Yeah.
Photocopied that. You're goddamn right, bro. You're goddamn right. You know what I'm saying? Like, because back in the day, how my grandma used to, like my grandma had mad videos and the videos would be that, she just recorded the movie on TV.
Yeah.
So you get the VHS and you record a movie on TV. So sometimes she would forget to press stop on the record. So you have all them old adverts.
Oh, great.
So it'd be like, buy the Citroen one and shit. And it would just be like, it'd be weird to watch all these old adverts of all these, you know what I'm saying? But yeah. And like, so my grandma would have all these videos of where she recorded movies on the VHS.
Do you have siblings? Are you only two?
Yeah, I've got three sisters, yeah.
Oh, wow. Which order are you? Where do you fit
I'm the second.
So were you watching Aladdin with your sister, older sister?
Yeah, my older sister, yeah. I was watching Aladdin with my older sister, yeah. Because my mum worked a lot. Mm-hmm. So I would be at my grandma's and my grandma's would come to my house. Like, she basically, like, every day I saw my grandma, like, you know, she kind of raised us and that. Yeah. So I was watching Aladdin at my grandma's. It was probably, like, my first memory. Man, we watched that video to the fucking bitch fell apart, man. That's all you would do is watch that video, bro.
That's
just
nice.
Every day. Always sticking that tape in. We'll watch it, then we just hit that rewind. You know what I'm saying? It weren't like DVD was instant. You had to hold that bitch down. You know what I'm saying? Man, we watched the hell out of that tape, man. Yeah, but no, that was probably my first one.
That's not a bad first one. What's the film that made you cry the most? Are you a crier, Jamali Madden?
Nah, I don't... Do you know what? I don't cry at films. Mm. Like, my mom is a mad, like, my mom will, like, I saw my mom cry so much in my life from movies that her tears mean nothing anymore. Like, I'm desensitized to my mom's tears. Like, it's just, she, but all she did was cry at films, yeah. And I just never really got it. There's a couple films that, like, I still had that man, that's a bit, you know. And the one that did it for me lately, which is a weird one, was Logan.
Oh, yeah. You know the film Logan? Sad.
But that bit where he goes, when he's like, he's dying, and then he just goes, oh, this is what it feels like. Man, that shit got me. I didn't cry, but it really got to me, man. Like, I don't know what because the film was so dank the whole time.
You've been there. You've fucking been there.
I've been there. I know what it feels like. But it's just like the film as well is there's something about, how can I put this without sounding so? Because it's hard to justify what I'm saying. There's something about, because that character is one of my favorite type of characters to watch. And I'm not even into Westerns that much, but that sort of cowboy motif. I like the anti-hero. I like the guy who does things wrong, but has a good heart. You know what I'm saying? Like that hero, for like my favorite comic book hero is Punisher. Like I just, right, I love, you know what I'm saying? Though I love that character. Like that character just always like, got to me, like, you know, I like Jesse Custer from Preacher. I love those characters that sort of anti-heroes and sort of like, you know what I'm saying, get the job done and they might do some wrong, but you know their heart's in the right place, and to sort of have that storyline and then at the end this sort of man's man, you know what I'm saying, breaks down because he's dying, but he finally finds that feeling that he's been looking for but can't let himself have, and only in his final moments. It just fucking, that shit just got to me, man. And she turns that cross into the X. Yeah. Oh my God.
That film's a masterpiece. That film is fucking brilliant.
It's so good. I think that's one of the best superhero films ever made, personally. Like, and people always say to me, what? I go, man, that film is beginning to end, just fuck it. And it's like, you know it's a bad film when they release the noir version. You know what I'm saying, bro? That's some artistic shit, bro, when they have to release it in black and white for you, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how you do it. But that shit was just, that shit's like a cold Western, man. That shit was just like, you know, the action's great, storyline's great, you know what I'm saying? It's got enough of that, not cheese, but it's got enough of that superhero-y kind of thing that I like in my superhero films, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm a big comic book guy.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so I love all that type of stuff, but it was such a unique take on a character that's so known. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you cry in real life or do you just don't cry?
I haven't cried in a long, long time still. I'm not like one of them dudes who are like, I don't cry. You know what I'm saying? Like I've had some experiences where I have, you know what I'm saying? I ain't gonna lie, but I don't, it's not my go-to emotion, no.
What about fear? What's the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared and do you get scared?
I'm not a big fan of horrors. The one film I remember when I was a kid, because basically I was at my dad's mum's now. So it's my other grandma. And it's basically around my grandma's house, there'd be all of our cousins would be there. Because I've got like, on my dad's side, my family's huge. Like I've got like, I think I've got like maybe 30 first cousins.
Wow.
And all of them have kids. And then some of them have kids. You know what I'm saying? So I've come from a big family on my dad's side. My dad's got like seven, I think my dad's got six sisters and three brothers and, do you know what I mean? And they've all got three, four kids and shit. And so all of my cousins would be at my grandma's little house and that. And I remember it was late. It must have been, I mean, I say late. I'm about 7, 8. And it's like, I say late. It's probably like maybe 10:30. And I remember they put Exorcist on. Man, that shit. Fuck me up, man. Exorcist, and another thing that fucked me up was the Goosebumps movie. shit fucked me up, man. That doll, and I know this isn't a movie, but the Goosebumps TV show, there's one episode of Goosebumps that I couldn't watch today. That's how scary it was. It was like this girl, she gets transplanted into a snow globe. And when she gets into the snow globe, it's like this normal town, but everyone just has pig masks on and they don't say anything. They just chase her, right?
Fuck,
and the whole half an hour is this girl just running for her life while these people with pig masks just ominously look at her and just start running. Bro, that messed me up, man. It's the fact that they don't say nothing.
Yeah.
It's just they just see her and they all have these really messed up pig masks and they just... Bah! And they start chasing her down the road.
Horrific.
And then she's just running this, and it's just her. It's just a white girl running for half an hour. And it's one of the scariest things I've ever seen in my life, man.
What is the film that people don't like? It's not critically acclaimed, but you love it unconditionally. You think everyone's an idiot.
there's a thing called Love Don't Cost a Thing, right? And it's got Nick Cannon and Christian Milian, right? And Steve Harvey plays the dad, yeah? When I tell you this film, I love this film. So it's the basic premise of the guy is in high school. Nick Cannon, who's obviously 30 at the time, is in high school. And he's like a nerdy kid. And then he basically pays Christine Milian, who's like the popular girl, to like pretend to be his girlfriend so he can become more popular or something like that. But obviously she falls in love. Yeah, but obviously she falls. Man, I don't know what it is about that film, but I love that film, man. Like, I just love it. I remember one time I was with my boy, yeah, and we're too good. I said to him, yo, bruv, you ever seen Love Don't Cost a Thing? He goes, bro, I fucking love that film, bruv. Like, we both were like, what, you like that film too, yeah?
That's
it was
great.
Like, we're both keeping it so secret, like, we love this film, bruv. We love that. He goes, bro, that film's sick, though. That film's sick. So Love Don't Cost a Thing with Christy Milian and Nick Cannon. Honestly, probably one of the, you know, because I'm not really into romantic stuff films. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I got burnt on that. I remember not that long ago, a girl made me watch Notebook.
Yeah.
That film, yeah, is one of the most depressing fucking films I have ever seen in my life. I hated that film. I was mad at her for showing me that. I was like, why would you show me this, bro? This is so, you're telling me they die. Do you know what I'm saying, bruv? They're so hurt that she can't remember. That film was so scary. I Googled Alzheimer's. I Googled how not to get Alzheimer's. That's how much that film fucked me up. I was Googling how to prevent dementia.
That's the film that scared you the most. The fucking Notebook.
That film made me. Yeah, do you know what? Let me go back on that one.
Yeah.
Notebook scared me the most. Like, I've never had a film that made me Google how not to get dementia. Right. Bruv, I'm out here eating goji berries now. Out of fear that I'm going to lose my memories. I'm going to lose my memories, bro. Like, that's so terrifying. But what was the question? Yeah, sorry. Love Don't Cost a Thing. Because in terms of romantic films, it's not my favorite. Because there's one character in a romantic film or a love interest that I think is so underrated. I think it's the best depiction of a love interest in any film ever made, right? And to this day, I'm pissed you never won an Oscar, right? Minnie Driver in Good Will Hunting is the best love interest in a film ever made. And no one can change my mind on that. But in that film, she plays the perfect role. She plays that role perfectly. Like, there is no love interest that I was so rooting for in that film. In any other film. Like, that love interest is like, because she was funny. She was smart. Because sometimes I watch a film and I see the love interest and I'm like, are you trying to make me buy into the fact that the woman that don't matter about all the hardships you would go through, but you'd still be with her? Like, I don't buy into it. I'm like, she's just kind of, But that her in that film, and it's not even because she's a beautiful woman. It's not about even her looks. It's just the personality oozes out of that role. You know what I'm saying? She beats Christine Milian. If Christine Milian it was in Love Don't Cost a Thing, you would have had.
If Minnie Driver
poster,
was in,
you would have had that poster.
I'm loving this. Was the film that you used to love, but you watched it recently and you do not like it anymore?
Street Fighter the movie.
Great answer. The perfect answer.
When I was a kid, there weren't a better film than Street Fighter the movie. I was like, yo, this film is so bad, Like, you got the gap with the light. Bro, I loved that film when I was a kid. And I watched it recently. I'm like, yo, this is honestly probably the worst film ever made. But when I was a kid, that was a great film, a perfect film.
Yeah, really good.
You know what I'm saying?
Kylie. Is it Van Damme?
Yeah, Van Damme, Kylie Minogue, and a bunch of actors. Oh, there's one guy where if you saw his face, you'd recognize him, but I can't remember his name. He plays... he plays the last boss. He plays the big boss. I can't remember. But anyway, and you see Blanka. Blanka's like the green, the guy who does the electricity. His character looks fucking awful in that movie, man. Like, the makeup is terrible. And that was like big budget too. That wasn't a low budget movie, you know what I'm saying? But that film's probably, I think, one of the films that as a youth, I loved it. You know, it's one of them films where you would love it in your youth, but as you get older, you kind of just go, man, you look for different things at that point. You know?
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Stadtsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. you'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval, variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49%. Based on credit worthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school?
I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board.
NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program.
That's right. They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more.
Are you attending in New York?
Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online.
And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
I'm saying.
What's the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but because the experience you had seeing it will always make it special to you.
I'd probably say 8 Mile. Yeah. I'll say 8 Mile for one reason. And there's another reason where I'm more conflicted about it because of just like who's in it. Because it's one of them weird things. Well, at first I say 8 Mile because I remember when I was a youth, one of the things I would do as a kid is when I'd go to my dad's on the weekend, we would go Hackney Market, and we would buy a video, like a pirate video. Yeah. And he would go back to his house and he would make us fried chicken or lasagna or rope. Like the only things he would make is spaghetti bolognese, fried chicken or lasagna. And as we got older, we realized because they were cheap to make. But back then, we fucking loved it. Like,
yeah, I'd go to that restaurant.
Yeah, yeah. And then we'd watch a video. And I remember 8 Mile was the one I always wanted to watch. Like, oh, yo, can you watch 8 Mile? Can you watch 8 Mile? Like, I remember just that time. It kind of reminds me of that time. And another film that kind of resonated with me a lot when I saw it, but it's kind of one of them things now, is because it's got Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
So I understand the context of that. But, yeah. You know, just... if we're just talking about just the film alone, you know,
yeah.
If I was being honest, it would be American Beauty.
Right.
Like, I remember watching that young. I remember I got fucking baked, man. I was like so high when I watched it. And I remember my college tutor was like, yo, watch this film, innit? And it was just that there was something that resonated with me about a guy who had stuff, but said, fuck it. I don't want this life anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, this isn't for me anymore. And I don't know what it was that resonated with me, but it's just that thing of like, even though this is what everyone's telling me I want, I don't want this. You know what I'm saying? I just remember that storyline really hitting me, and really just that freeness of him being like, nah, I don't want it. But this is what everyone told you they want. I don't want it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I think there's something real freeing about that. And it was something that really hit me when I saw that. I was like, fuck, man, that's like, you know what I'm saying? I really thought that was real deep.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. What's the film you most relate to?
Sure, it sounds crazy. And my life wasn't like that. But there's real elements of Kids, the film Kids, that I kind of get.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Just that sort of like being young and trying to be a man, or what you think a man is. You know what I'm saying? Especially around your friends and sort of how you view things and sort of like, trying to deal with adult things, but still with an adolescent mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying, though? So you're trying to deal with these real adult things that are coming at you in life. And sort of when you grow up certain ways or in certain places, adult situations come to you a lot earlier than people that grow up in other places. You know, you're sort of exposed to a lot earlier. So you have to deal with those concepts and those, you know, those not hurdles, but those themes in life that are going to come at you, whether it be, you know, you know, sex, violence, all these type of things, and how you got to deal with that. But then also you're a kid. And it kind of reminds me of, you know, late night beer with my friends and sort of really, you know, like, I mean, one thing that really resonates, like one thing I remember when I watched that film, a real coming to age moment for my life was the first day I just roamed the streets. We had nowhere to go. We had nothing to do, but we left the house at 12 and we weren't coming back to 10. And that was the whole day. We're just bopping up and down streets. Yo, wait, yo, let's go knock around and see if he's home. Boom, we go knock around his house. You coming out? Yeah, he's coming out. Boom, he's joined now. Let's go hit the park. We go park. Who are we going to see? Oh, we see some people there. We go smoke a joint. Boom. And this the whole day, just roaming the streets. Like, that was such a coming to age moment for me. You know what I'm saying, though? Just walking around.
I really
the
know
streets.
What you're saying. It's so exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. And it's just, you know, and it felt like it was, you know, it's like summer. It's the summer. It's just the whole work, the whole day feels like a possibility. Where now everything's so organized in my life. Mm-hmm. I know I have this at 2, and then I've got to go and boom, and I've got to tidy up my flat because I've got some delivery. Do you know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah.
I've got to pay my bills. I've got to make this call. I've got to have this meeting. Where back then it was just a wide open day, and you just put on your trainers and you just, boom, you set out. That's it. And that's kind of like the theme of kids. Where you got all this wide open thing, but also with the backdrop of you've got to deal with a lot of concepts and adult themes that your brain can't comprehend but has to, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that film kind of resonated with me a lot.
Brilliant, right? What is, here we go. Let's hope it's not the same answer. What's the sexiest film you ever saw?
The first time I saw Cameron Diaz in Mask. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, Cameron Diaz in Mars.
Yeah, is unbelievable.
Man.
That's unbelievable.
I remember just thinking that woman is, I remember, go with, you know, because you'd fancy girls. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Oh, she's cute. She's a, but that was the first woman I went, that woman was beautiful in that film. Do you know what I'm saying, though?
It's one of the great entrances in cinema history. Cameron Diaz in the Mask.
Yeah, Cameron Diaz, Mars. Even, do you know what? Like, I don't know the names of the films, but the films that would come on late night on Channel 5. You remember them old school Channel 5
I know
films?
The films.
Yeah, I man. They were sexy fucking films, but them films there too. They were early wanking, bruv. And you had to go through a whole storyline because you could come, bruv. I'm telling you, bruv. There'll be a whole storyline and shit. And you'd have to, like, have a TV in my room. And I would like, turn the TV down. I'd go outside, see if you could hear it from the outside. So I had, like, enough that I could hear it, but you can't hear it from the door.
Yeah.
And you'd have, like, you'd have your backup channels just in case someone comes.
Enough volume that you can follow the story. You need to follow the story.
Yeah, of course. And then you had the backup channel, but, yeah, dumb films, but also, like, Cameron Diaz. I would say Karma Electra when she's in A Good Burger.
Yes.
You know, she was bad. Man, I think they were those films where I'm like, yo, these girls are bad as hell, man. Yeah, I'm saying they were so bad.
There's a subcategory to this question: troubling boners, worrying why-dons. Film you found arousing that you weren't sure you should.
I'm trying to think about this one actually. The Mum and Adam's Family.
Morticia.
Yeah, the mum.
Yeah, lovely.
That's probably, but it's like it's meant to be this weird kind of gothy vampire woman.
But they're a very sexy couple. Morticia and Gomez, they're fucking all the time and they're madly in love.
Yeah. All right. Winnie the Pooh.
Okay. Thank you.
It's like about Winnie the Pooh not wearing no trousers. It's just kind of...
Thank you, Jamali. That's now you're getting it. What is objectively the greatest film?
If it is the answer that you get a lot, I'll give you another one. Because I've got two that I think for different reasons. I would say objectively, a film that's perfect beginning to end is Goodfellas.
You can have that because I love it.
Yeah, beginning to end, there is no fat. Because it's like, as a comedian, the best way I can explain it is, you ever see someone do a joke? It's like Gary Delaney's joke. Mm-hmm. I got an escort, filled it with diesel, now she's dead. There's literally no fat in that joke. Just every word and everything is for a purpose and there's no fucking about. And it's like that for me. That film, every scene is perfect. Every actor is great. Every music choice, it's just beginning to end, one of the most perfect films ever made, I think. It's just, there's no boring points. There's no lulls. And it's a long film too. It's not short. It's like 2 hours or something.
I know, it's 2.5 hours. I don't know if you know this, but me and Nish Kumar have pitched a game show called good luck not watching Goodfellas. And it's where we sit, contestants come on and they need to do something, but we put on Goodfellas at any point in the film.
That's funny.
And they have to try and not watch Goodfellas.
That's funny. Goodfellas is one of them films where no matter what I'm doing, if I'm flicking over, it could be any time. I could be, there's been times where I'm about to go sleep and you're flicking over before and there's Goodfellas and it's 45 minutes in and I'm watching the whole fucking thing.
Yeah, you could.
Like I haven't seen the beginning, I'm watching the whole fucking thing. Even the bit, you know, the helicopters are chasing him and he's doing the cut. Well, I love that film so much, man.
What was your other one? What was your backup? Oh, nice.
Yeah, Warriors. I think Warriors.
You can have Goodfellas, though. You can have Goodfellas because it's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
What is the film you can or have watched the most over and over again?
Shaun of the Dead.
Nice.
I've watched that film so many times, man. Like, I've seen that film. It's always the go-to film for me if I'm, like, if I'm chilling, you know, if I'm smoking with a friend and they're like, oh, I'll put something on TV, I'll put on Shaun of the Dead. If I'm with a girl and it's like, I want to watch something, I watch Shaun of the Dead. Do you know what I'm saying? It's such a go-to film for me. Nice. That it's one of them films that, like, it's just always a film that I go to, man. For whatever reason, I just really love that film. I think it's like, because I love zombies. Like, zombies is one of my favorite genres.
People.
Of that sort of, people. But, like, that's one of my favorite genres. Like, I love, you know, Evil Dead and Dawn of the Dead. Like, I love them shits. And that film just really, it's such a nice take on it. And it's just, you know, it's, like, funny. And, you know, that's probably my go-to film.
You can have that. We don't like to be negative, so we'll be fairly quick. What's the worst film you ever saw?
Do you know what? I had to actually, this girl showed me this film and I had to actually ask her what the name of this film was. So let me get it up. The Holy Mountain.
Tell me.
I fucking hate that film. Have you seen it?
No, I don't know what it is.
It's a real art house film. It's a proper art house film. And it's regarded as like people go, oh my God, it's a masterpiece. And it's honestly one of the worst fucking films I've ever seen in my life, man. Like, I don't mind, like, I like art house films. I'm that guy who will go Picture House or Genesis and sit there and watch a film about two Hasidic Jews playing chess and, you know what I'm saying, like, for 3 hours. Like, I'll do that. Like, I enjoy that. But it's just, like, such a sort of self-wank fest. And if people know this film, they're going to fucking tweet me abuse for this. But it's like, you know, it's like this guy, he's like a thief, but he looks like Jesus and the alchemist. But he represents one of the cards of the tarots and he's in this dirt and then he meets a dwarf that has no legs and no arms who represents something else and they go and all the people are sort of standing in like a crucifix to represent. And it's just like, oh my God. And she was so looking forward to showing me this. And I was like, this is honestly one of the worst films I've ever seen in my life. I hated every second of that film, man.
Was that a girlfriend showed you that? Was that on a date?
Nah, it's just a girl I'm seeing, but.
Did you break up after that?
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, yeah. That's the reason she didn't become my girlfriend, genuinely. It was all going good until she showed me that fucking pile of shit.
I get it. You're in comedy. You're very funny. What's the funniest? What's the film that made you laugh the most?
I'd say Pineapple Express really made me laugh. But I know that's one you heard. Stir Crazy.
Great answer.
Stir Crazy is just like, and I know Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder didn't like each other.
Didn't they?
But that's quite... Nah, apparently they really fucking hated each other. Yeah, I think Gene Wilder hated that Richard Pryor was a cokehead who was crazy. Yeah. And Gene Wilder didn't like... I mean, and Richard Pryor didn't like that Gene Wilder was his square who thought he was too good for everyone or something like that. But like Gene Wilder wrote about how he hated him and Richard hated him, but they were just such a good comedy team.
But that's why they're good together, because that's their parts.
That's why they're kind of good together.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's also the thing of like, you know, Penn and Teller, they don't talk off stage.
I know, it's so weird.
They're famous for not being friends. Like they go, we like each other, but we don't hang out. I don't talk to his wife. She don't talk to my... And I think that's probably why Gene Wilder, because they wasn't so wrapped up in friendship, they could tell each other, that's not funny, do it this way. That's not, you know what I'm saying? Like you can sort of be a bit more honest with someone who's not your friend. Because, you know, we work in the game. You know what it's like when you're working with one of your friends and you kind of go, hey, man, could you, you know what I mean? But like, you could just be so brutal and that, but Stir Crazy, man, when they're in the prison and it's, you know, it's just it's like Richard Pryor trying to tell him how to walk. Is one of the funniest fucking man. That film always does it for me. I think Gene Wilder is one of the underrated comedy actors.
He's incredible.
You know, he's such a good comedy actor. And I think people give him dues, but they don't give him dues to actually
not enough
how funny he was as a comedy actor. Like, I remember my grandma said to me, man, you got to watch, she always told me, oh, you want to watch real comedy. Because I used to watch Kenan and Kel. Mm-hmm. And she goes, that's not funny. That's not funny. The real funny is Young Frankenstein. That's real comedy. I said, man, get out here with that Young Frank. Bro, I put on Young Frank. Oh, my God, man. That changed everything, man. That film, oh, my God. Gene Wilder in that film is just so funny, man. So such a funny film, man. Like, just, and it's so hard to write comedy like that.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm saying? Where it's so punchy but not repetitive, and it's just everything's a gag, but it's kind of tongue-in-cheek but done so classy. I love that, man.
I always think that those films, like, there's joy in them. Like, there's some magic to it, which is, I don't know how to describe it, but they're with the light. Do you know what I mean? Like, they have joy in their eyes, in their...
It looks like they're actually enjoying doing what they're doing and they're enjoying being funny. Because I think comedy is quite draining and it's hard to keep on enjoying it sometimes. You know what I mean? And so people get so much enjoyment from it. But, you know, to when you see them doing it and it looks like they're having fun doing it, you know, the script's good and it's just like perfect. You know, there's certain times in life where things just have a perfect storm. And I think that's their moments. And there was a couple of other guys that liked that for me, like Leslie Nielsen from Aeroplane. Just such a funny man. Do you know what I'm saying? No, and that's such a rare thing where he's just funny. There's not, and there's no if buts or whys about it. There's some people in this world where they're just funny fucking people, man. And that guy, man, Leslie Nielsen, man, that guy always made me laugh. Even when he does like older roles, you know, him, there's another guy, John Witherspoon. He was the voice of the granddad in Boondocks. He was in Friday, where he plays the dad. You know the guy who plays the dad? Where he goes, you come here, you eat my pig feet, you eat my boom. That guy is just, every film he's in Boomerang, where he wears this big suit with all these mushrooms on it. And it's just everything this guy's in, he's just... he's even in that Soul Plane film, which isn't a good film. But he's so funny, like... I'll say Bernie Mac was a funny comedian actor. Bernie, like, Mac, them guys, mate, there's one bit, but, you know, there's like little lines. I just love lines in films. Like, you know, there's one bit where, I think it's Friday, where he asks to hit the joint. He plays a pastor and he asks to smoke the joint. And they're like, he goes, ain't you a pastor? He goes, nah, for my cataract. And the way he just says cataract is one of the funny, you know, and there's just guys like that where I just like look up to in awe, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, and Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor. In the Stir Crazy definitely does that for me, you know. It's one of the funniest things I've ever made.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Stadtsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate?
Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Smiley Maddox, you've been wonderful. You've been fascinating, funny, brilliant. However, when you were in Taskmaster and you did it with minimal effort, as you know, there's a rabid following of the show. And you were walking through the streets of Reading. Taskmaster had been on a few weeks. And you were annoyed with yourself because when you did that tweet saying, doing with minimal effort, you were joking because you actually put quite a lot of effort in. But these people didn't understand that. And they're in the car. They've been circling the area for quite some time looking for you, these massive Greg Davies fans. And they see you just walking. You're just roaming like kids. And one of them pulls out a gun and shoots you to death.
He shot me to death.
Shoots you to death many, many times. And I'm walking around Reading. You know what I'm like. Got a coffin with me. I'm looking for Jamali. Where's I haven't seen Jamali for a while. Not since Taskmaster's been on telly. Is he all right? I see you in the street. You've been shot to death.
To death.
And there's blood everywhere. Foxes have had a go at your body. Fuck. Yeah. They've really gone to town. And because of the pandemic, it's not many people on the streets. It's just your body's been ravaged by street foxes and stuff.
Great.
And I come along, I'm like, fucking hell, man. I knew you shouldn't have done that tweet. You should have been more sincere. I knew that was a risk. But these things happen. That's Taskmaster for you. You're not the first drive-by shooting from Taskmaster. Anyway, so I try and put you in this coffin, but there's a lot more of you than I was expecting because the foxes have left drop-ins. You know, you've got maggots. There's just more stuff. So I have to chop you up. I have to chop you up with an axe.
Like a donut.
I have to chop you up like a donut. And I stuff you in the coffin, right? Stuff you in the coffin. Yeah. There's more of you than I was expecting. The coffin's absolutely jammed, right? Mm. There's only enough room in this coffin to slide one DVD in the side with you for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. And one night, it's your movie night. What film are you showing everyone in heaven when it's your movie night? Jamali, go.
Green Street.
Really?
Yeah. Yep, we're watching Green Street for the rest of our lives.
Fucking hell. Just for that
opening scene. Just for that closing scene when it's like they're fighting and it's just music playing. Love that scene. And there's another scene which I love is when he's talking and then he goes, when you realize you're not made of glass, life opens up. Fucking perfect. Green Street.
Smiley Maddox, thank you. You've been wonderful. Have a lovely death.
You too.
Good day to you.
Bye-bye.
So that was Smiley Maddox on a Rewind Classic episode. Be sure to check out the Patreon page at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you'll get extra chat, video, and mixtapes at various tiers. Or otherwise, if you fancy leaving a note on Apple Podcasts, that'd be lovely too. But make it a review of your favourite film. Much more fun, and Brett and Maureen love nothing more than reading them. Do it for them? Thank you so much to Jamali for his time and presence on the podcast. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to, and this is where Brett thanks me for editing and producing the podcast, so I say it's a pleasure. Thanks to iHeartMedia and Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. We will be back next week with another Rewind Classic. But that is it for now. Brett and I hope you're all doing really well. And in the meantime, have a lovely week. And now, more than ever, be excellent to each other.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbor Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbor Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind. Sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.